Okay, so we will continue on our study through the revelation of Jesus Christ. And just as we went through last week and went through some numbers, first we wanted to point out that God wants to communicate something to us. It's a book he wants us to understand. We talked about numbers of 7 and 12 of 10. We talked about horns and heads and some of those representations during in prophecy. We went through some working principles of how to get to understand what's figurative, what's literal, how God defines certain terms so we can understand what he is talking about. And so, and then we finally talked about how the Old Testament writers didn't understand themselves, and they made careful search and inquiry where the Holy Spirit defines things, not man, and then we can understand fundamental things. Without understanding fundamental things, such as the church or the new covenant, God's plan for mankind from the beginning, these things and things like these, we are not going to be able to understand the revelation of Jesus Christ. And so it's important to understand some fundamental things like that before we get into the big stuff, if you will, or understand some of these deeper meanings and stuff. So, anyway, have any comments or questions from last week before we start?
Yeah. I just, that last thing there, you know, that last slide, mm-hmm. talking about having understanding of the new covenant and the church and God's plan and stuff. If you don't have that, Revelation doesn't work
right.
for you. And like all the crazy, whatever you want to call them, off-the-wall views that you see, and we kind of went through quite a bit of that with, you know, the Second Coming study.
Mm-hmm.
Any of those people that have those ideas don't have an understanding of who the kingdom is or
right.
what the new covenant really is.
Right.
You can't draw those conclusions without having that. You can't draw accurate conclusions without knowing what the kingdom is.
Right.
It just doesn't happen.
Right.
Because it doesn't.
Yeah.
Those ideas don't fit.
Mm. Yeah.
That really is important. I'm glad you really brought that out. Cause,
yeah.
I mean, you can't really have a revelation study with somebody that doesn't, if you're not on the same page with them on the kingdom.
Right.
It won't work.
Mm. Yeah, because their views are completely different views, and so if you're going to have different glasses or different lenses or a different starting point for doing that. But
and again, I think that's, you know, that's what we talked about on the Second Coming deal. But like Brandon said, the whole Bible points to that. You know, if you study the Old Testament, even you can go in the Old Testament and you get it's a good storybook and has some good advice there, but really what it's talking about is a church. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's what it's projected. And,
right.
And if that's, you got to almost have that picture through the whole thing to get it to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So
right.
I think it's important to understand that the church is really what the Bible is talking about.
Right.
You know? And that's what Revelation is talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's where, like, we're still kind of introduction, but when we look at the first verse, I mean, it's the revelation of Jesus Christ, and so it's talking about something to do with Christ, and obviously his bride is what he is looking at there. It's not something about tribulation. It's not the main focus. It's not 7 years tribulation or the Antichrist or anything like that, but it's about Christ and his church. And yes, there's enemies that we see as we'll study through that of the church and of Christ, but it's the victory, the picture it paints through, the victory that we have there, but we kind of want to look at today through some introduction again is kind of lay some a few more points here, and we'll have to do this again next time as well before we go through it. But looking at some parallel and big picture view in prophecy. Okay, and so we're going to start back in Genesis this morning. Genesis 41, pretty familiar passage of Scripture we all kind of know the story. Maybe some details we couldn't quote, but we know the story. So if somebody want to read Genesis 41, and this is after Joseph is already in Egypt. He's been in prison. The cupbearer tells Pharaoh of this guy who can interpret dreams when Pharaoh has a dream. So in verse 15 through 32, if somebody would like to read that, please.
And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, but no one can interpret it. And I have heard it said about you that you can hear a dream and you can interpret it. Joseph then answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me, God will give, excuse me, is it not in me, God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. So Pharaoh spoke to Joseph, in my dream, behold, I am standing on the bank of the Nile. And behold, seven cows, fat and sleek, came up from the Nile, and they grazed in the marsh grass. And lo, seven other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly, and gaunt, such as I had never seen for ugliness in all the land of Egypt. And the lean and ugly cows ate up the first seven fat cows. Yet when they had devoured them, it could not be detected that they had devoured them, for they were just as ugly as they were before. Then I awoke. I saw also in my dream, and behold, seven ears full of good came up on a single stalk. And lo, seven ears, withered, thin, and scorched by the east wind, sprouted up after them. And the thin ears swallowed the seven good ears. Then I told it to the magicians. There was no one who could explain it to me. Now Joseph said to Pharaoh, Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. God has told to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one and the same. And the seven lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, and the seven thin ears scorched by the east wind shall be 7 years of famine. It is as I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Behold, 7 years of great abundance are coming in all the land of Egypt. And after them, 7 years of famine will come, and all the abundance will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will ravage the land. So the abundance will be unknown in the land because of the subsequent famine, for it will be very severe. Now, as for the repeating of the dream to Pharaoh twice, it means that the matter is determined by God, and God will quickly bring it about.
Okay, and so would someone want to read chapter 41, verse 53 through 57, please, of Genesis? Okay, so let's look at some principles that Joseph used here while giving an interpretation of this prophecy. It might not seem like, this really has nothing to do with Revelation, but some principles that he used. Notice in verse 17 through 24, and one I don't have on here, I want to point out first, but before I get to this one, but Brandon read it there in verse 26. He says the seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. Okay? And the dreams are one and the same. So notice what he says there is he doesn't say, if you don't have some of the other information, it looks like it could be 14 years. But notice how he still says that. If you don't understand what he's saying in there, you're going to think, well, there's 7 years and then 7 years, which would be 14 years. Okay, so, but that's not what he's saying. See, the dreams had some different details, but they were representing the same thing. It's 7 years with the cows and 7 years with the ears of corn. There are two different dreams, but they had the same details and represented the same thing. And this is not uncommon with God of having these parallel views with things in Genesis 1 and 2, where you have creation, overview, and you have a detailed creation of man in Genesis chapter 2. Genesis 10 and 11, where you have the genealogies there, and you have Nimrod, the mighty hunter, the king that was there, but you also have he was the king of Babel in chapter 11. So you have those parallel views there because it continues on past Nimrod in the genealogies and goes on to other people past him. But then it goes back in chapter 11 and goes back and starts over and talks about the story of Babel. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are also examples of God repeating information. So it's a part of God's communication is sometimes parallel views or as in something that's talking about one thing here, and it means it's a different dream in this case here with the ears of corn or grain. It's a different dream, but it's meaning the same thing. So just because it's different does not mean it's the same thing. There's not a 7 year of fat with the fat cows and 7 years with the corn or with the grain. It was a repeating dream because it was going to happen soon. Okay, another thing is that the detail of the Nile, okay, it talks about the cows coming out of the Nile, okay, didn't mean that the prophecy only affected Egypt. It didn't really mean anything except that it was simply a detail in the story. Because if you look in verse 54 and 56 and 57, it talks about, as Ryland just read there, that the famine, specifically in 57, you could say the people of all the earth came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because famine was severe in all the earth. It wasn't just a famine for Egypt. Well, the details there were the cows came out of the Nile. You're standing by the Nile. I mean, that was the river that ran through Egypt. If you wanted to think of, you think of the Euphrates, you think of Assyria. You think of the Nile, you think of Egypt. Okay? So, but that detail was just a mere part of the story. It didn't mean that it was only going to affect Egypt. But you could draw that conclusion the way that other people will draw conclusions in prophecy because, well, it's the Nile, so it has to mean it's talking about Egypt. Because that's what it's, because they can't, the good years came out of Egypt, but so did the bad years came from Egypt too, and that's where it affected. But that's not the details of the story. The Nile is just simply a part of the story to make it a dream. It was a dream. Okay? So it was part of the bigger picture. It was just a part of describing the big picture of the seven good years and the seven bad years of famine. Another one would be go to Luke chapter 10. Let's turn up there. We'll turn it over to there. Luke chapter 10. And so I want to read verse 25 through 37, please.
Wishing to justify himself, he said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Jesus replied and said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among robbers, and they stripped him and beat him and went away, leaving him half dead. And by chance a priest was going down on that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise, a Levite also, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan who was on a journey came upon him, and when he saw him, he felt compassion and came to him and bandaged up his wounds, pouring oil and wine on them. And he put him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him. On the next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper and said, 'Take care of him, and whatever more you spend, when I return, I will repay you.' Which of these 3 do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell into the robber's hands?" And he said, "The one who showed mercy toward him." And Jesus said to him, "Go and do the same."
Okay, so the point of the parable here wasn't to show the person who was on the road was the sinner, and the donkey was salvation, and Jesus was the Samaritan. The Samaritan was Jesus, and the innkeeper was God, and the inn was heaven. That wasn't the point of the parable. They all were part of a bigger picture to tell the story of who is the neighbor, because he said, "Well, who is my neighbor?" The question was arise to him. And he said, "So who do you think the neighbor?" He told a story, a parable. "Who do you think the neighbor was?" And he said, "The one who showed mercy to him. So go and do the same." See, the point of the picture there, of the details, weren't about the details. It was about who is the neighbor. It was something used to describe who was the neighbor and who was not the neighbor. Okay, so in prophecy, you know, I'm not saying that God doesn't have details at times. But when we have, there's a lot of times that there, and especially is true in Revelation, is that a lot of the details or some of the details are a part of the big picture of the story, not necessarily what the exact detail means, because God is showing something with those exact details. He's just describing a story like Pharaoh's dream. It was just, you know, the Nile didn't mean necessarily it was only Egypt. The corn and the grain and the cattle didn't mean that it was, you know, that was there was going to be two separate seven good years and seven bad years. Okay, it was representing the same thing that was going to happen quickly. Okay, and that you could also take that in light of Revelation as well. You know, when you with your repetitive view, God is communicating something that's going to happen soon. Okay, but the thing is that the book was written before our time, and the book is also written now for us. So it's dealing with something that we have now, that we're dealing with now, and we need to make sure we have the big picture when we talk about prophecy, because it's not all about the minor details all the time, which, I mean, sometimes it can be, but not all the time. And a lot of times those minor details are just a way to communicate the story, communicate the message. Do we have any comments on that before we move on?
Probably even with a lot of stories about the Good Samaritan, Jesus went overboard saying okay. That the Samaritan was a good guy to probably teach something. But still, the thing that he was teaching, I think, is that you need to be a good neighbor, whether you're whatever you are. But he, I mean, most of the Jews didn't like Samaritans, so
right.
He probably brought that up, but it probably wasn't the main point of the picture, or the story, probably. It's just, he's the guy who stopped to help, so that's what he was trying to do. And I think that's probably a principle still, like you're talking about. It's a big picture he's talking about.
Mm. Well, and it's the one who shows mercy, not the one who has a status or anything like that. One who showed mercy is who the neighbor was. It wasn't about anything else, and that's where because he's being tested, so he just, you know, again, just has some little details. I mean, the robbers aren't sin, or demons or whatever. I mean, that, but it's just a detail of how do you describe a story of someone being a good neighbor. But you have to have certain details in that story as well. So let's look at some parallels in the revelation of Jesus Christ. So let's go to Revelation 20. And what I want to show here is that as we're going to go over the next couple of weeks here, that there are in fact parallels within the book. And it's not something that's new to us. It's not something that's new to the scripture. It's not a new way of God communicating. So in verse 11 of Revelation 20 through 15, 11 through 15, if somebody would read that, please.
Then I saw a great white throne and him who sat upon it, from whose presence earth and heaven fled away, and no place was found for them. And I saw the dead, the great and the small, standing before the throne, and books were opened. And another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged from the things which were written in the books, according to their deeds. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and Hades gave up the dead which were in them, and they were judged, every one of them, according to their deeds. Then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death, the lake of fire. And if anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire.
Okay, so this, as we studied over Revelation in times past, I haven't done it this way, but we're going to look here, as I mentioned before. I want to show the parallels, and so you kind of be patient the next couple of weeks here, because I'm not going to get to all of them. But we're just going to show some parallels here of things that are described here, and show how they're throughout the book. And by showing that, then after we kind of get that foundation, we understand, okay, there is some parallels in here. So now we go back to start from verse 1 and walk through, and we can tell, okay, here's the beginning, here's the end, here's the beginning, here's the end, and go through that. Okay, similar to Pharaoh's dream. Okay, he had the dream, the cows came out, the fattened cows came out, the gaunt cows came out, dream was done. Then the ears of corn sprang up, the withered ears of corn sprang up and ate the other ones, and then it was done. So he's given picture and end, beginning and end, beginning and end, okay? In that deal, in that dream specifically. And you can probably look at other passages that could go. That was just one that came to mind for me that I thought was a good example. But so this here in Revelation 20, verse 11 through 15, is generally agreed that this is Judgment Day. Okay? So now I say generally agreed because you got your full preterists that aren't going to think that this is talking about specifically Judgment Day. It's something that could be the random person. But generally, premillennialist, amillennialist, even some postmillennial probably are going to generally get this as some sort of Judgment Day here. Notice some details concerning the wicked. Okay, this is a judgment for the wicked here. Heaven and earth fled away in verse 11. Okay, we know that 1 Peter, 2 Peter chapter 2 talks about when Jesus returns that this earth and the new heavens and earth will melt with intense heat, and all the things will help melt with intense heat, and there'll be a new heaven and a new earth. Okay, so heaven and earth fled away at this time at Judgment Day. Okay, so we have that detail there. The dead are before the throne and books were opened, and also the book of life in verse 12. Okay, so there's some other details there concerning the judgment of the wicked on Judgment Day. Again, it's generally agreed that this is Judgment Day. Now, you're not going to get an argument with a premillennialist. They're not going to differ with us on this. Okay, this is Judgment Day. The dead were judged according to their deeds in verses 12 and 13. Okay, so some other details there. Again, there's no really disagreement there between premillennialists and us on that either. Those names who were not written in the book of life were thrown into the lake of fire. Okay, and it's also right to say the lake of fire that burns with brimstone. Okay, verse 10, the devil was thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet were also. So it's not a lake of fire, and burns with brimstone, same thing. Verse 15, it talks about those whose names are not in the book of life were thrown into the lake of fire. So let's remember these details concerning the wicked as we look at other parts of the revelation of Jesus Christ. Okay, now let's turn a chapter ahead here to Revelation 21, and so I want to read verse 1 through 7.
And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there is no longer any sea. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is among men, and he shall dwell among them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be among them. And he shall wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there shall no longer be any death, and there shall no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. The first things have passed away. And he who sits on the throne said, Behold, I am making all things new. And he said, Write, for these words are faithful and true. And he said to me, It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give to the one who thirsts from the spring of the water of life without cost. He who overcomes shall inherit these things, and I will be his God, and he will be my son.
Okay, so this is also generally agreed that this is the rewards of the saints. Okay, so notice some details. Now I want to point out, I don't know if I have this one. First, before I get to this slide here, in verse 1, it talks about a new heaven and new earth. So when I talked before, mentioned before about how heaven and earth fled away in chapter 20, verse 11, and it's equivalent to where 1 Peter or 2 Peter 3 talks about that this the current heaven and the current earth will be destroyed with intense heat. Everything will melt with intense heat. And so that's what it says in verse 20, chapter 21, verse 1, that I saw a new heaven and new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth have passed away. Okay, so the first heaven, first earth passed away. Again, generally agree this is judgment. There's the judgment of the wicked. There's the reward of the saints. So verse 2, notice that it's the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven. It's a bride of Christ. Okay, verse 2 is the bride of Christ. And that's an important detail that the bride is rewarded. The church is the bride of Christ, according to Ephesians chapter 5, 22-33. And it's a bride made ready in verse 2 of Revelation there. It says that that the bride was made ready, adorned for her husband. Now, we're going to have to remember some of these as we continue going on through other things, but I'm bringing these up here. She is made ready, okay? Another details concerning the righteous here is that the tabernacle of God is among men, and he will dwell among them, verse 3 of Revelation 21, okay? Tabernacle of God is among men, and he will dwell among them. Okay, just remember that detail again. Verse 4, he will wipe away every tear. Okay, there'll be no mourning or death or crying or pain here. Again, this is why it's generally agreed this is the rewards of the righteous, the punishment of the wicked in chapter 20, the rewards of the righteous in 21 here. Revelation, no death, no tear, no mourning or crying or pain. Verse 6, the righteous have the right to drink from the spring of the water of life. Okay? Again, something that's generally agreed that's what happens when the righteous are rewarded after Christ comes, after he judges the wicked, after the sheep and the goats are separate, and the sheep are on his right and the goats are on his left, and they go away into eternal punishment, and the sheep stay in the eternal kingdom with him, and they drink from the water of life, verse 6. So now, remember these details concerning the righteous as we look throughout the book. Because we don't disagree with the premillennialist that this is the judgment for the wicked and this is the rewards of the righteous. Okay? No disagreement there. Any questions before we move on to off this? Sure. And we will get into the tabernacle more. The tabernacle of God being among men is basically the, you know, if that covering is over him, it's basically a picture that God is going to comfort. Okay, God is among men now. Obviously, the wicked have already been judged and thrown in the lake of fire. So when he says among men, he's not talking about everybody. He's talking about the righteous here. So the tabernacle of God will be among men. He will dwell among them. And again, yes, we have the Holy Spirit indwelling us. But it's still a little different. We're still on the earth bound by a physical body that's going to die. Okay, it's going to be different when we see God face to face. And so that's the idea there. I think that's that comfort a little bit there that he's wiping away every tear as well. No more death, no more mourning, no more crying. Kind of goes into that. And so that tabernacle of God there is that he is among men. You know, we are the temple. He's amongst us. It's that fellowship that we have that is. Yes, we have a taste of that now because the Spirit is within us and we have a peace within us, but it's different when we get to heaven.
Is that referring to the church somewhere?
Well, the church is the people there, yeah. So it would be the church. But it's still the idea of that tabernacle there if we're the church, yes, we're the tabernacle, but it's still he's amongst us too. And so that's kind of what he's showing us. I think it's really kind of showing there's no separation. Even though we're the church now, we're still tabernacle now, we're the temple now, but it is we're not separated by the physical body still. Okay, we're with him in heaven, and that's why there's no more mourning, no more crying, no more death, and stuff like that. Okay, so remember both of those things, and so we'll continue on in parallels in Revelation. Revelation of Jesus Christ. So let's turn to chapter 11. Chapter 11. Someone want to read verse 17 through 19, please.
Then we give thanks. We give you thanks, O Lord God, the Almighty, who are and who were, because you have taken your great power and begun to reign. The nations were enraged, and your wrath came. And the time came for the dead to be judged, and the time to reward your bondservants and the prophets and the saints, and those who fear your name. The small and the great,
okay, I don't have this as a. I know I don't have this as a slide, and I don't know if I want to bring it up, but I'm going to. But in verse 17, notice how it says, and if you read the first part of the book, it says, "Glory to God who was and who is to come." But notice what it says here Verse 17, we give thanks to you, O Lord God, the Almighty, who are and who were, because you have taken in. And we'll get into that in a little more detail. What I want to point out is that there is no is to come, because it's talking about post-judgment here. Okay, it's talking chapter 11 here, as we're going to look at some details here. This is talking about post-judgment day in chapter 11 at the end here. That's why there is no, it doesn't say who are and who were and who is to come, because he's already there. There's nothing else to come after that. But at the beginning of the book, when he's introducing the book and talking to the churches, we're still bound physically, we're still on earth here, so God is the God who was, who is, and who is to come still. But at this time here, when he's saying that, he's saying who are and who were, because they're already in the eternal state. So looking at a couple of these details here in verse 17 through 19, notice in verse 18 that the nations were enraged, the wrath of God came, and it was time for the dead to be judged. That's what it said in Revelation 20, that it was time for the dead to be judged. But it says it here in Revelation 11, at the end of the chapter, it was the nations were enraged. Why were the nations being enraged? It was time for your wrath to come. Your wrath came. So it's talking, it's describing in the prophecy there, it's describing, it's just like when he is talking about the dream and the Gantt cows, there was the famine that destroyed it. Okay, or the withered ears of corn that destroyed the good ears of corn. Okay, he was in that moment of time in that dream. He was prophesying about the bad time. Okay, and here he is prophesying. This is talking about the nations are enraged and the wrath is coming. He's describing judgment. It was time for the dead to be judged. And in verse 18, notice it says, it was time to reward your bondservants and prophets and saints and those who fear your name. So when is that time? That happens according, that happened in Revelation 20 and 21 already. The dead were judged, which a lot of times when you look in Revelation, Jesus Christ, when it talks about the dead, it's talking about the dead spiritually. Okay, just kind of throw it out there. I'm not saying it's never talking about anything else, but most of the time it's talking about the dead spiritually. Okay. So the dead spiritually are the ones who throw in the lake of fire. The rewarding the bondservants happened in Revelation 21, and the premillennialists are all going to agree on that, but for some reason, we see the same picture in Revelation 11 as well. The dead are judged, the wrath of God came upon the dead, which is the wicked, and the rewards of the bondservants. There is time to reward the bondservants. And it was time to destroy those who destroy the earth. The wicked who are destroying the world, who don't care about God and use it for their own good. It's time to destroy those who destroy the earth. How come that's happened in chapter 11? The Antichrist, according to the premillennialist view, hasn't even come yet. But it says in chapter 11 that it's time to destroy those who destroy the earth. It's time to destroy the wicked. It's time to punish them. This passage points to a parallel picture throughout through the book of Revelation of Jesus Christ. Another detail here, lightning, thunder, earthquakes, hailstorm are details describing Judgment Day as well. I mean, the idea is the power of God, okay? You talk about earthquakes for a second, okay? You got two things there. When Hebrews chapter 12, it talks about we have received a kingdom that cannot be shaken, okay? It says prior to that, he says, he has said once more he will shake the earth, but not only the earth, but the heaven as well. But since we received a kingdom and not be shaken, we don't have to worry about it. Okay, so he talks about in Hebrews about a time that he's going to shake the earth and the heaven. That probably would be considered an earthquake. And what he is talking here, he's giving those details, lightning, thunder, earthquakes, and hailstorm are details that are describing things. Obviously here, this is talking about details with Judgment Day. The dead are judged, the righteous are rewarded, and lightning, thunder, and earthquake, and hailstorm are happening there. And that's an important detail to remember as we're looking at that, but it's describing the power of God there in chapter 11. So we see that at the end of chapter 11 gives us some details on some similar details as we looked at in chapter 20 and 21. Now, if there's any questions here, we can talk, but remember that these are some kind of parallel points that I'm pointing out here, and we're going to go through the rest of this stuff as well. But is there any questions or anything that on this stuff, or any questions, details?
Does John tell the story a few times as he goes through and maybe adds details?
Well, he tells it seven times. He tells it seven times. Yeah. And so that's what we're going to see here. And that goes back to the number seven being a perfect picture, a complete picture of it, too. But as we'll see here, we haven't really shown it yet in our study, but we're going to see that it's actually seven times.
And he adds details as he goes.
Details.
So, mm-hmm. But what some people think is they're all a different event.
All different, yeah. And I don't understand. I mean, it's relatively pretty similar language there about the nations enraged, the wrath of God came, and it was time to judge the dead and to reward the righteous. I mean, that's in the middle of the book, and so they'll agree that that's what the end of the book is, but the middle of the book, for some reason, is something different. But we're just showing that we know that God he uses parallel views a lot, and so it's not out of the question for him to use a parallel view here as well. And so we're going to see that this is some parallel views here that is showing some same details in chapter 11 as it's showing in chapter 20 and 21 as well.
In your first illustration today about the famine, he used parallel.
Right, he did. Views. Parallel views, yeah. They even, I mean, first two chapters are a parallel view of the Bible. I mean, you have creation as a whole, and then you have the detail going on in deeper detail of man. Because man was created in chapter 1, it says, but he goes into detail of how man was created in chapter 2. So it's not out of the question for God to end the book, end his book with it either. Okay, let's look at another one here. Let's go to Revelation chapter 6. Revelation chapter 6. Okay, and we'll get into what the sixth seal means and stuff when we get to there, but remember some details from Revelation 20 and 21, which is, again, is universally pretty much agreed upon that that's judgment day for the righteous and for the wicked. We saw in Revelation 11 there that there were some other details that shared the same thing with Revelation 20 and 21, but there was talked about the hailstorm and the earthquake and stuff like that. So in verse 12 of Revelation 6, if someone wants to read verse 12 through 17, please. Okay, so when we go through this, we're going to look at the sixth seal, what that means. We're going to look at why there's a gap in chapter 7. So, we'll get to those questions and stuff like that and later. But what I want to point out here is that there's some details here describing the judgment of the wicked, just as there was in chapter 11 of Revelation, and just as there was in chapter 21 and 20 and 21, or 20 actually, for the wicked. But notice there that there was an earthquake, and the stars fell, the sky split apart, and was rolled up. Okay? So you notice some details there. Again, earthquakes point to that. We talked about earthquake, the great earthquake, and that's just for reference. I don't have this on. Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 12 for a second here. Just keep your hand there a second. I know it's a little out of order, but let's go to Hebrews chapter 12 since I referenced it before and just show that there is going to be a great earthquake when Jesus returns. Okay, so prior to this here, towards the end of the chapter, but he gives the example of when they were on Mount Sinai, and Moses went there, and it was a terrible sight in verse 21, and they're full of fear that people were saying, and they couldn't even bear the command, don't touch the mountain, okay? Verse 25, what happened there back in Exodus is he shook the earth, okay? So in verse 25, it says, see to it that you do not refuse him who is speaking. For if those did not escape who refused him who warned them on earth, how much less will we escape who turn away from him who warns from heaven? And stop there a second. So they didn't escape it when he was talking to him. They didn't escape his judgment when he was talking to them back on Mount Sinai around there when he warned them from the earth. They didn't escape the judgment. So how much less are we going to escape if we refuse him who warns from heaven? So verse 26, and his voice shook the earth then, but now he has promised, saying, yet once more I will shake not only the earth, but also the heaven. This expression, yet once more, denotes the removing of the things which can be shaken, as of created things, so that those things which cannot be shaken may remain. Therefore, since we have received a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us show gratitude by which we may offer to God an acceptable service, which reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. So he is saying there, yet once more he's going to shake the earth. Not only the earth, but the heaven as well. Okay, so just so we have that reference there. When we see the earthquakes or the sky split apart or the stars falling, why would the stars fall? Because heaven is shaking. Because the earthquake is happening. The sky is splitting apart and it's rolled up. And we sing the song, the idea of it is well with my soul, the sky is parted like a scroll and Jesus comes. I mean, that's not a thought that's foreign, even to the religious world, is that when Jesus comes back, the sky is going to roll up. Yet we don't find it in chapter 20. We find it in chapter 6 of Revelation. Okay, the earthquake the sun became black as hair and as sackcloth and hair, and the whole moon it turned to blood, and the stars fell from the sky, and so on. The sky was rolled up. Verse 11, it says, every mountain and island was moved from its place. I hit that wrong. It's supposed to be verse 14 there. Did I say verse 11? Verse 14, I'm sorry. Yeah, I just say verse 14 there. Yeah, so it's similar to Revelation 11. It's similar to Revelation 20, verse 11. Verse 14 says, every mountain and island is moved from its place. Revelation 20, verse 11 says that every island and mountain was, there was no place found for them. Equivalent to 2 Peter chapter 3, where the heaven and earth is burned up. Revelation 21, it says, heaven and earth, there's a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth have passed away. So every mountain and island being moved from its place, that only points to when there's no place for them, when God destroys it. Verse 15 and 16, the wicked want the rocks and the mountains to fall on them to hide them from the wrath of the Father and the Lamb. There's wrath that came. Well, that's supposed to happen in Revelation 20. But it happened in Revelation 11, and we see it happen again here in Revelation 6. I know I'm working backwards, and so when we go through it from the beginning to the end, that's going to be different. But my point is that you start at a spot where there's no disagreement on this judgment and the judgment and the rewards, and you're going to show that it's happened before in chapter 11, and it's happened in chapter 6, and it's happened in chapter 16, and it's happened in chapter 19, and then chapter 3 is a picture of the church, but we'll get to that when we get to there. But verse 17, it says, the great day of their wrath has come. Well, that's not supposed to happen until Revelation 20, according to the premillennialist view. But we see it happening here in chapter 6, as well as Revelation 11 and Revelation 20.
Right. It doesn't say that
in any these other places. Mine says six seal and terror is what mine says in chapter 6.
Yeah.
So and again, that's going back to where they don't have the same view going into the book. And so it don't have the correct view going into the book. So it's they have a warp view, so their view is going to be different, you know. And so that's where, so this here in chapter 6, describing details that surround judgment day for the wicked, because when do the wicked want the mountains to fall on them? And people can say, well, yeah, during the tribulation, maybe that's all happening. Well, it doesn't, the great day of the wrath doesn't describe anything but the great day of judgment. There's not multiple great days of wrath throughout there. It's the great day of the wrath. The sky split apart. The earthquake happened. The sky was rolled up. The stars fell from the sky. Every island and mountain has moved from its place. It's destroyed because Christ returned. So this, again, points to a parallel picture throughout the revelation of Jesus Christ. Now, that's the judgment side of this part here. Let's go to the rewards of the righteous now in chapter 7. And we can talk about some things after that. Verse 14 through 17, if somebody would want to read that, please.
And I said to him, "My Lord, you know." And he said to me, "These are the ones who come out of the great tribulation, and they have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. For this reason they are before the throne of God, and they served him day and night in his temple, and he who sits on the throne shall spread his tabernacle over them. They shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more, neither shall they the sun beat down on them, nor any heat. For the Lamb in the center of the throne shall be their shepherd, and shall guide them to springs of the water of life, and God shall wipe away, shall wipe every tear from their eyes."
Okay. So now we see the rewards of the righteous. Okay, so the righteous will be before the throne of God in his temple, and his tabernacle is spread over his saints. Verse 15. Okay. John is describing, he's the question was asked, so who are these people? The angel asked him. He said, "Well, you know." And he says, "These are the ones that came out of the great tribulation." Again, I'm not going to go into detail on that, but that's the tribulation that's talked about there. He's talking about that in general, and we'll talk about that when we go through there. But they were washed in the blood. Again, they're Christians here, that I was talking about, which the church, the premillennialists don't think that the church will be on earth then, according to their view. But this here is talking about Christians here. But in verse 15, they'll be before the throne of God and his temple. Okay, so again, the church is the temple of God, and that is true, and that's true throughout. But again, like the tabernacle and the temple here, and the tabernacle can be the church as well. But I think like in this case, again, it's similar to Revelation 21, verse 3, where his tabernacle is spread over them. It's that protection. Again, that's shown Revelation 21, when he spread his tabernacle over them. And there's some other details we'll get to here in a second. But there's no more mourning or crying. Well, that's what happens in chapter 7. Okay? As well, the righteous will hunger and thirst no more in verse 16. They'll hunger and thirst no more. Again, something that happens at Judgment Day, after Judgment Day, when they're rewarded. The Lamb will lead them to the righteous to the waters of life, verse 17. Well, that's supposed to happen in Revelation 21, but it's happening in Revelation chapter 7 as well. God will wipe away every tear from the eyes of the righteous. Again, that happened already in Revelation 21, and that's generally agreed that that's talking about the rewards of the righteous after Judgment Day. But we see that picture here also in chapter 7. Again, this points to a parallel view throughout the revelation of Jesus Christ. You see these pictures throughout. And again, we'll go into, when we go back through that, we're going to go into a lot more details of some of this stuff. But that idea of these pictures going back to, yeah, we all agree that Judgment Day is Revelation 20 and the rewards of the righteous is Revelation 21. But we're seeing that happen throughout the book also. chapter six shows the judgment of the wicked, and chapter 7 shows the rewards of the righteous. Anybody have any comments on that or questions? We could have got, we're running out over time. We're going to get into the other parallels. There's other parallel pictures. Again, we have to remember some of these details for next week as well. But he's shown two different ones today, or three different ones, really. Revelation 20 and 21 is a picture of the wicked and the righteous after Judgment Day. And you have a picture in Revelation 11 of the same thing, and a picture in Revelation 6 and 7 of the same thing. Okay, and so, again, we're showing these parallel views throughout. That, again, when does God wipe away every tear? When judgment happens. Okay, so that happens in chapter 7 here. Again, that only can point to a parallel view. Anybody have any questions on? Okay, well, we'll stop there this week and pick up next week again.